How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by Kevin Kleinrock. A lot of you listening to this know the name. Some of you may not. And even if you don't know the name, I'm pretty sure that you know the name without knowing the name. What does that mean? Well, Kevin Kleinrock has worked on about 8 million different projects, including Hulk Hogan's Micro Championship Wrestling, Wrestling Society X, Urban Wrestling Federation, Viva La Lucha, XPW, probably a bunch of stuff I haven't mentioned yet, including, in fact, something I'm very interested in, Ghost Hunters he's worked on. So, I got a million things to talk to him about today, including a brand new project. And Kevin, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, let's get going. First off, I want to kick it off with a new project that you're working on, which, of course, is Viva La Lucha. You're looking to put together a Kickstarter to create 8 episodes of Viva La Lucha, which will be broadcast ready to take to different television networks to try to get the program signed. And as I'm sure you'll note here, very different from Wrestling Society X in the sense that you want full control over this thing, not the network. And as a result, you're going to produce it yourself. It's going to take a fair bit of money. But give everybody some details on what's going on here.
Well, so yeah, I mean, it touched on a few different things there. The project is Viva LA Lucha.
LA.
As in Los Angeles. I understand, not to be confused with our previous pay-per-view and DVD series, Viva La Lucha. But, you know, kind of taking a step back to what led us to this, a few years ago, we as Mass Republic, my partner in the business, Ruben Zamora, and I, we were starting to look for where the talent for our television productions and live events and things that we wanted to do were going to come from. And we wanted to really foster the development of more lucha-style wrestlers within the United States. And so we started working with a few schools to create what we called our Masked Republic development system. And up until just yesterday, it was the Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy in Los Angeles and Pro Wrestling Revolution's Training Academy up in Northern California. And then yesterday, we actually just added our first East Coast school, which is the SAT's Lucha Wrestling Academy in New York. And Viva LA Lucha, at its core, is the next step in our development program, which is to start moving towards television and developing these talents for television. For lack of a easier way to put it, it's the Lucha equivalent to NXT, I guess you could say. And the idea is that there's so many luchadors who don't necessarily know how to get in the ring and have a good match with an American or WWE-style worker, and there's so many traditional wrestlers who don't necessarily know how to get in the ring and have a good match with a luchador, that we wanted to not only bring lucha to the next level for a lot of workers, but kind of create wrestlers who could go in either style on either side of the border. And with AAA getting ready to come to the United States, and with, you know, even with like WWE's problem they've had of finding how to bring in the right opponents for Sin Cara in different places, you know, we really think like this is an important piece for the wrestling industry, not just for our own ideas. So, but Kickstarter and taking the Kickstarter to do this was in part because of the Wrestling Society X experience, which was a great experience. I mean, I was so blessed and lucky to have a major television network say, here's $3.5 million to create, you know, basically what amounted to 5 hours of television. But there was a big exchange for that. And the big exchange was when you create a show with a network from scratch, they have a whole lot of say in it because it's their money, and rightfully so. But so the Wrestling Society X show became a show in MTV's image. And I think anyone that actually watched the show, and all the episodes are actually still online. You can watch them all for free at wsx.mtv.com. But if you watch the show and then you watch the web show that we did after the television show, which was WS Extra, the wrestling on WS Extra, the network didn't look at, they didn't care about, because it was this bonus web show that I delivered to them. So we gave full matches where you could actually see the wrestling for what it was. And, you know, really good matches, guys who went on to WWE and AAA and guys from Dragon Gate before Dragon Gate really exploded in the United States. But when you watch the television product of WSX, They made us cut out any punching, any kicking, anything that resembled a rest hold. It was literally like high spot, cut to the pretty people in the crowd, high spot. And it really wasn't a wrestling show that wrestling fans would love for the wrestling itself. It was a fun and different show, and it was exciting for its own reasons. But really, the wrestling itself got kind of bastardized. And so my goal in taking to Kickstarter and trying to deliver finished episodes to the network is to show them, look, this is what a great show can look like, and hope that they want to move forward with it without changing too much of the core of what happens in the ring.
Now, going back to your comments on Wrestling Society X, you neglected to mention explosions. Thought I'd bring that up right there.
Yeah.
Now, when they went to work to edit these episodes, I mean, you mentioned they butchered all the wrestling matches and that sort of thing. Any other major changes that they wanted that kind of moved away from your original vision?
Well, so let's talk about explosions for a second. You know, MTV had decided that if they were going to put wrestling on the air, they wanted it to be a wrestling show that you could not see anywhere else. That meant the in-ring action and what surrounded it. And that's where the kind of the explosion thing came from. I learned something very key when I was having these first creative meetings with the network. And I've talked to a lot of people about this since then, and not just about MTV, and it's not just about wrestling shows. You should never throw out a random idea in front of a television executive unless you are 100% committed to run with it, because without a doubt, the craziest, silliest idea they will gravitate to. And what happened was we were sitting around talking about things that we could potentially do late in the season or build to. And I brought up, you know, a number of different kind of wacky Japanese matches, like Piranha Death Match and Exploding Cage Match. And it was like everything else became fuzzy, and that's what they, like, focused on. And they actually wanted to do a major stunt. That was their term for it, a major stunt every single week. They wanted someone getting blown up or thrown off of something, and I was able to reel that in a tiny bit and got them to say we only had to do it every other week. But no, if it had been my choice, maybe we would have done the exploding coffin at the beginning of the season, and I would have done the cage match at the end of the season, but definitely would not have blown something up every week. And so I had to start getting creative about how to do it. Like one week we had Vic Grimes get thrown through a WSX logo made of light tubes, and that exploded. Another week we had Teddy Hart grab some wires from like behind the production area and like electrocute somebody with it. And so, but yeah, it really, and it's just so, it was so crazy because we couldn't use steel chairs. I don't think anyone ever really noticed. We weren't allowed to use steel chairs. We weren't allowed to use kendo sticks. We weren't allowed to do anything that could be easily replicated by kids at home, but we could blow people up and electrocute them. Somehow in the end, we were able to use thumbtacks because, you know, kids can't get thumbtacks at home. But it was just, it was so crazy. And so while in terms of the wrestling storylines and the creative arcs there that I wrote, they didn't touch any of it. You know, yeah, they wanted, or they would suggest, hey, you know, let's have a little bit of drama between this girl and this guy because, you know, our audience might like that or this or that. But really, when it came to the wrestling storylines, They were very hands-off. They had to approve everything, but they didn't really ask to change anything or much. But when it came to the visual presentation, everything down to, you know, a lot of people made fun of us, and probably rightfully so, because a lot of our audience was hired extras, and they were, like, pretty extras. They were pretty people. And I even remember specifically doing the pilot. Now, but we shot these episodes midweek. And most wrestling fans aren't really available to come out to a TV taping at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. They're working or they're in school. So they hired extras that were the typical MTV extras. And I remember doing the pilot. We had the producers in the production truck in our ear at the beginning, and they're like asking us to move these less attractive real wrestling fans to the back and bring these pretty people up front. And it was like, it just made it for a very MTV-looking wrestling show.
Now, the new Viva LA Lucha, your Kickstarter is going to be available here at the end of the week, and it's not... Actually, I guess the best way to say this is that if you're listening to this, this doesn't sound like it's chump change. This sounds very expensive. But in the television industry, for what you're trying to do, it's actually like a drop in the bucket to what one would presume you would need to do what you're trying to do, correct?
Yeah. So the Kickstarter is looking for $60,000, which to the wrestling people listening, I'm sure sounds like an ungodly amount of money. When you look at the fact that we're going to produce a pilot and 8 webisodes for that money, and that's 2% of what the budget was for Wrestling Society X, then you kind of look and go, well, maybe there's something to that amount of money. And the thing is that when you're producing broadcast-ready episodes, that's a big thing. Most people that shoot wrestling shows or do the iPay-per-views, even though they might look great, they're not necessarily broadcast ready. Everything from color correction, audio mixing, closed captioning, errors and omissions insurance, all that stuff adds up. And so when we were looking to try to figure out how we could produce a pilot, I think most people who know wrestling, even if you look at the way like TNA does it or the way WWE's done it in the past, the most expensive part is shooting that first episode. All that cost of flying people in, getting the venue, getting the lighting. And so we looked at what we would need to produce just one episode and then what we could actually deliver for just a little bit more money and decided, you know what, we'll have to aim a little bit higher for the Kickstarter, but then we can at least deliver a pilot and 8 episodes of the show. And even if no television network ever picks up the show, eventually we can just release the episodes online if that's what we want to do. But it won't happen right away because we will go out and we will shop this to networks, after we shoot it. But the cool part, or one of the cool parts of the rewards that we're doing is that we're going to do, a live iPay-per-view of the taping, but it's not just going to be a traditional iPay-per-view. It's going to be the iPay-per-view into the television production experience. So you'll get to see some of the behind the scenes of what goes on to put on the television show. You'll also get to see into the promo room where some pretty experienced people will be working with coaching the talent on how to do promos, both English promos, Spanish promos. And then also, which we haven't talked about yet, we are very lucky to have 2 very experienced, especially for this project, co-executive producers for this project, and that is Conan and Sean Waltman. And if you're looking to develop talent that can go in Mexico and in the U.S. and can understand the ring psychology of both, you really can't find 2 better people, because obviously I don't have to talk about Conan's experience on both sides of the board and the fact that he is kind of head of talent development and booker for AAA. And Waltman, I think, is still to this day one of the most underrated minds when it comes to wrestling psychology, and he has experience of a number of years in AAA in Mexico and how to take that American style and make it work for that audience or make it work in the ring against traditional lucha wrestlers. And so, not to glaze over those two, but part of the backer iPay-per-view will also be their direct thought, like stream of conscious thoughts about what's going on in the ring and the performers that will never be released as part of the commentary on the webisodes or episodes, never be released on DVD. So this iPay-per-view live production experience will only be available to backers.
To clarify very quickly what he's talking about, during the actual live taping as the matches are going on, you're going to get an audio feed of Conan watching the show. Meaning if somebody falls off something, for example, and he goes, "Oh my God," you're going to get that. If a match is no good and Conan, who is a straight shooter, goes, "That sucked," you're going to hear all that. So you're basically getting the outlaw commentary of Conan that you're never going to be able to hear anywhere else, is actual live reactions to everything as it's going on, which actually sounds like the best possible... whatever you'd call it, reward for donating to this project.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, you know, while a lot of the talent will be coming from the development system that we already have established and from the Santino Brothers School and the Pro Wrestling Revolution, we've got a lot of great talent that's interested and wanting to be part of this project that are going to be there to be in the ring against these up-and-coming guys. The Young Bucks are going to be involved. Homicide's going to be involved. Papa Don's going to be involved. The SATs. And then from Mexico, Hijo de Rey Mysterio, Extreme Tiger, Bestia 666. On the female side of the equation, Ivelisse Velez, who's currently the Pro Wrestling Revolution Women's Champion, Christina Von Erie, Buggy Nova. So there's a lot of great talent. So it's not just going to be up-and-coming wrestlers in the ring. They will be matched with, paired against, learning from some of the really good current talent out there. And we'll also have other producers involved behind the scenes working under Conan and Waltman, including Adam Pearce. I don't really necessarily need to go through his resume, but multi-time NWA World Champion, ROH Executive Producer and Booker, Los Luchas, who are former NWA Tag Team Champions and are the head lucha trainers at the Santino Brothers Dojo, and they work for Lucha Vavoom and a number of other companies. Joey Chaos, who is the head trainer at Santino Brothers, Kafu, who was part of the WWE developmental system for a while and is the head trainer at the Pro Wrestling Revolution, Brian Cage. So a lot of great talent that will be involved in making this worth it, even if you don't know some of the up-and-coming talent that will be part of it.
Now, the Kickstarter's note is going to be up by the end of the week. And if, let's just say, worst-case scenario, actually, this wouldn't be the worst-case scenario, but let's say that you raise the money and you create all of these episodes and you take them to various networks and you kind of get the, well, you know, maybe down the road, but we're not into it here at the moment. I mean, is it still worthwhile to do this project? I presume you'd still put out DVDs and everything like that and still pursue it. I mean, I know it's a terrible question to ask. What if this whole thing doesn't work? But
no,
I mean, it's...
And I understand the question. And the thing is that, you know, before we decided to take this to Kickstarter, this was about talent development. The idea of doing a show like Viva LA Lucha was something that's been in the back of our minds for a while. And then as we developed the development system, I really wanted to create a place where we could bring that talent to the next level. Because you can go out and wrestle on a million indie shows, and if you're never put in front of a camera, if you never work with producers who have produced matches for television or WWE-style matches or Lucha-style matches, you can be able to do all of the fancy moves you want or all the great chain wrestling you want, but you're not going to be ready to move to that next level. And so, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, while originally the plan for Master Public Development was going to be just to focus on creating talent for our own projects, as AAA got ready to move to the United States and Conan started looking at U.S.-based talent, and as we saw what was happening with WWE's inability to create the right rivals to keep kind of lucha-type feuds going. I mean, think about this, Brian, for a second. It's so hard, for lack of a better way of putting it, to take the top indie guys and get them ready for WWE television. I mean, they go to Florida, and they're part of the great NXT system, and remember, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with the move to Orlando. But there's so much reprogramming that has to go on in the brains and in the styles of even the best indie wrestlers that takes it some time. And now you're looking at a luchador from Mexico who doesn't even think, like, automatically wired like a U.S. indie wrestler. And they have to first get to there in their head before they can even get ready to be prepared for WWE. And so I looked at what we were going to kind of be doing as a way to really bring some of this great talent from Mexico just to be able to hang and be considered to be moved up to work with guys like Sin Cara and Rey. And I mean, it's really, if you think about the Místico failure, for lack of a better sense of the word, I mean, yes, they sold a ton of Sin Cara merchandise. And, you know, behind Rey and Cena, he probably was the hottest merchandise seller for quite some time. But really, if you think about who he was in Mexico and the audience he had in Mexico and the level he was at in Mexico, I'm sure the WWE thought they would be much closer to creating that when they brought him in. And from the wrong, I mean, still to this day, if you see him on TV, he's mixing it up with the same four guys, maybe. And so I really look at, regardless, even if we never sell this to a regular television network, I think that the project is worth pursuing just for what it will hopefully do for wrestlers and for companies who need that talent. And that's one of the things about Master Public that I think is confusing sometimes to people. We're not a wrestling promotion. We were never set up to be a wrestling promotion. Yes, we put on shows, and yes, we do television tapings and pay-per-views and DVDs, but Master Public in and of itself is meant to be a company that focuses on bringing Lucha Libre beyond the borders of Mexico, whatever that means. We work on licensing for luchadors so they can try to make money off of their intellectual property and not constantly get ripped off by people who are putting their images on masks or t-shirts. We work to create talent exchanges. One of the big things I'm looking at doing over the next year is starting to move more lucha-style stuff into the U.K. We're sending Hijo de Rey Mysterio over there for the debut show for a new group called Pro Wrestling Republic. We have some other things planned for the U.K. So, you know, we're very dedicated just to bringing lucha outside of Mexico, helping the Mexican companies expand their products and their way to monetize what they're doing, as well as creating our own products. But so, you know, if we can help the industry and we can help wrestlers, then this project's worth it in and of itself.
Now, we're going to get back to this topic here in a while, but I got a lot of other questions for you based on other promotions you've worked with, including one of my recent favorites, that being the Urban Wrestling Federation. It sadly, it appears from an outsider's perspective to be dead, but you never know what might happen. Tell us a little bit about Urban Wrestling. Is it at this point considered a defunct promotion, or are things in the works?
I would definitely say that things are in the works. It's been quite some time since I talked directly to Steve Carroll about it. But the thing I think people have to look at where it started from, and I don't know that people ever really had the right impression of what the plan was from day one. The plan was to put onto tape and put onto pay-per-view a number of events, and then see what business can be created from there. You know, Steve Carroll, the guy behind Urban Wrestling, has been around the television and wrestling and fight game business for a very long time. He was the business side of ECW. Every television and pay-per-view deal that ECW did was through Steve. He's represented the King of the Cage franchise for television and DVD and pay-per-view for a long time. So this was not set up to be something that was necessarily going to go on pay-per-view and go for years and years just as a pay-per-view product. We did the six shows, and now that footage is there, and that footage is with Steve, and he's seeing what can come. I can't really say more than that. But, I have to be honest, one of my favorite things about doing that project was listening to Vinny's reviews of the show. I thought that your guys' reviews of the pay-per-views were well worth producing them alone. It was really great. And the thing with that product was, you know, at first it was, even for me, a guy who's kind of known to have produced some of the more extreme wrestling types of things, like Wrestling Society X, being asked to write a product that included guns, and I mean, like everything that yes. were just those things that you didn't normally work into wrestling, guns and drugs, and it was a bit of a culture shock at first. But honestly, like once I literally was like, "Well, screw it, let's just throw the writing rule book out the window." Steve O'Neill, who had brought me into that project, who was the guy that I wrote the pay per views with, it was a lot of fun. It was just really fun to be able to approach a product not from a wrestling standpoint, but from an entertainment product standpoint. You know, we looked at that not as if we were creating a wrestling show per se, but as if we were doing a crime drama with wrestling in it. You know, it was more like The Shield or more like The Wire than it was a traditional wrestling show. But I think if you look back, what we did deliver from bell to bell when guys actually got in the ring was really good. And the most shocking thing to me about the way it kind of went was, and I think Steve Carroll thought that the hip-hop community would be more likely to embrace the product than the wrestling community. And in the end, what we saw was that the wrestling community was actually a lot more supportive. I mean, yeah, people, you know, poked fun at it because of the guns and the drugs and some of the storyline. But when it came down to bell, I mean, I look at, you know, look at some of the guys that were on that and some of the matches, like Rich Young, you know, constantly, consistently, people were like, wow, that match was better than anything I ever saw of him in WWE. Or, you know, just the other really good matches that we put on. And so I was really proud of that, that, you know, again, kind of looking back to the Wrestling Society X thing. It's like, even if this product was crazy, what we delivered bell to bell in those matches was top-notch, and I was really happy with that.
I remember when the very first time I watched the very first episode, when it was over, I was like, that may be the worst show I've ever seen in my life. And then I watched the second time with Vinny, and the second time through, it's kind of like, hold on a second here, you know? Hold on a second. And then by about the third or fourth episode, I really was like, this is the show I'm looking forward to every week. And I think that obviously part of it was, you know, I found it to be hilarious. I just thought it was so different. You know, somebody on our board put together like a list of matches that have been repeated in WWE over the last 6 months. And I forget some of the matches. It was like, you know, Dolph Ziggler has wrestled Antonio Cesaro 24 times in the last 6 months or something like that. And I watched SmackDown. It's like, my God, I've seen this match 84 times. And you watched Urban Wrestling and it was like, man, I have never seen anything like this before, ever, anywhere in wrestling. And like you said, the in-ring, it was so much better than I expected it to be. And at the end of the day, I think that obviously looking back, I mean, there were still a lot of problems, not the least of which was if you were watching it for the first time and you didn't know any of these people, you know, by the end of the first episode, you still had absolutely no idea what was going on. You had absolutely no idea who was who. You know, it was missing that, you know, in your early episodes, I feel you've kind of got to explain to everybody who everybody is and what's going on. And there was also the issue that sometimes you just couldn't hear what was happening. But if you take those things out of the equation as an actual wrestling show, it was so unique and it was so different. And I was sad when Urban Wrestling ended its run. But go ahead.
I'm still very hopeful. I mean, I have a relatively short list of things that I still want to do or that, I mean, most of my time in wrestling at this point is dedicated to Master Public and our project, and I'm extremely passionate about that. But I had made a decision a number of years ago that because of just my life outside of wrestling, I'm a divorced father of two special needs kids, I don't have time to play wrestling anymore. And I don't blame anyone that, you know, loves the business so much that they're willing to, you know, work for cheap or, you know, that's what makes the industry go around, especially on the independent level. And I would never fault somebody for doing that. But for me personally, it became a matter of I needed to be in the wrestling business. And I needed to own a piece of everything that I was doing. The only thing that I have done since I made that decision years ago was Urban Wrestling because it was so different and unique and fun. And I also have to admit it was incredible to be able to just focus on like the creative side and not have to worry about the business aspects of a product because that was new and different to me too. And I realized too that after like 16 years in the business or whatever, that even from the time I was 18 years old, every project I did, I had either created or co-created from the ground up for myself. And it was awesome to actually have somebody come and just bring me into a project to be creative. So that was great. And I still on my list of things to do, I really do hope that in some way, shape, or form, Urban Wrestling Federation does come back and that I can be involved in that creative process again. And I do think that AO, slightly different, but in the right place with the right support, it can be something that people are entertained by and watch. And because of, like you said, I mean, as long as you kind of look at it from a different perspective than your traditional wrestling show, I think it's a very fun and entertaining program.
Now, did you write everything, or what was your writing role as compared to maybe others who were helping out?
Well, there are really only two writers. That was Steve O'Neill and myself. And the things that were more outlandish when it came to guns and drugs and thuggery were mostly Steve. And he was really good at writing that kind of stuff for this audience. So my role came in more in terms of the figuring out the matches, booking the matches, figuring out how then to take the matches and work them into the storyline. And then, you know, we polish each other's thoughts as well. You know, Steve might want to do this, and I'd be like, well, let's try to bring it back a little bit more to, like, how we can work that into the wrestling. Why don't we do it this way? And I'd come up with something wrestling-wise and approach it from this way and be like, what about this? And he's like, well, it'd be better if we did this, and then we can involve this boss and this guy. And then when it came to producing a lot of the vignettes and promos, that's also kind of where I did a lot of my work during those weekends or during those shoots was physically in the room or in the limo or in the alley producing the promos and the vignettes.
Now, I remember watching the show, and sometimes you'd see a vignette and it's like, okay, clearly like there's an idea behind this vignette. But then other times I'd watch a vignette and it's like, it seems to me that they just put the camera on these guys and gave them a rough idea of what to say. And then the guys entertained themselves and tried very hard not to burst into laughter and sometimes failed. Is that an accurate representation of what happened?
Certainly some of the times. I mean, you know, I think those are more in reference to when we were working with the rappers themselves.
Now, yes.
But, I mean, you know, a lot of these guys were very excited to be a part. Well, they were all excited to be a part of it. Some of them were a little bit more into it and took it more seriously from a wrestling side, and some of them were just having maybe a lack of a better way to put it is more fun than I would have liked them to from the wrestling production side. But I think that and there's only so much as a producer. I mean, Steve maybe got a little bit more ballsy than I. I'm not embarrassed to say that, you know, sometimes when you're on set working with a guy who maybe has a reputation for being a little thuggish, you don't necessarily want to push all the same buttons you would push if I was doing a promo with, you know, someone who just came from wrestling.
Sure.
These were real rappers, real gangster rappers, real guys with you know, their own beasts. And you know, there were certainly times where it's like, this guy, we had to do this guy's promo in this place and keep him away from this guy because they had legit street heat or whatever. And so there are definitely some interesting things that, you know, had never happened on other sets that I was on. That
This is what you needed that backstage feed for.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. I never even considered that before, that there might actually be rappers that had legitimate street heat with each other that you had to keep away from when producing this television or this pay-per-view program.
Yeah, or Steve and I would sometimes, write a storyline and then, because everything we did was approved by Steve Carroll. He read through everything. He gave his notes and said, you know, I like this, I don't like this. You kind of had that Vince role of being the executive producer overseeing it all. And there was definitely one or two times it was like, we can't do this because this guy, we shouldn't have this guy beef with this guy because they have beef in real life, so you need to change up the crews that are doing this. So.
That's the best story I've ever heard. I didn't think it would get any better with Urban Wrestling, but it just did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, let me get into some of these Twitter questions here very quickly because we got a lot of them. So... This person wants to know, do you believe that Extreme Rising is no more?
I believe that Extreme Rising hopes to rise again. I can tell you that there are definitely plans in place to try to take what was already produced and create television for the Pittsburgh and Philadelphia areas, which was always part of the plan, and then hopefully use that to do future events. But that's really all I know, and really all that I would guess at this point.
All right, this person says, I guess long story short, how did you manage to get Wrestling Society X, for example? I guess actually the better question would be, how did you end up getting MTV to agree to fund a wrestling promotion for $3.5 million?
Okay, let's see if I can make this story very short. Houston Curtis, who owned Big Vision, who was a production company and the company I was working for, was formerly an MTV executive. He had developed a poker college frat night show that he was going to go pitch at the network. And I had mentioned to him in passing, hey, I've got this idea for this like punk rock wrestling thing. Maybe someday we could go pitch it at MTV. And he was like, well, what is it? We talked about it. He's like, let's pitch this. So we worked together a sizzle reel. People that don't really know the television industry, so a sizzle reel or a pitch reel doesn't necessarily reflect actual footage shot for the show. You can actually get kind of creative and kind of be like, this is the vision for the show, and since it's nothing that will ever be seen in public, you can just use whatever materials and whatever music and whatever you want to present the concept. So the concept for WSX actually originally was the Rancid Wrestling Federation. Back when we were doing XPW, Rancid is my favorite band, and they are friends with Vampiro. And we were doing a show at the Olympic, and all of a sudden, the guys from Rancid are backstage with Vamp. And it was kind of like, you know that commercial where the M&Ms meet Santa Claus, and it's like, oh my God, they do exist. It was just this crazy moment where my favorite band was backstage. They're a fan of XPW. They watch the DVDs on their tour bus, and I'm a huge fan of theirs. And I learned more and more over the next few years that there was this huge affinity of punk rock bands and wrestling. And I always had this idea in the back of my head of like, how can we combine those two worlds and do this like cool underground bunker punk rock wrestling thing? In the end, the band decided they didn't want to be part of it directly because they had never allowed anybody to have any control over anything that their name was on that they didn't fully control. I totally respected that, and it was definitely the right decision. They were concerned that MTV would F up a product with their name on it, and they would have. So I made this pitch tape out of XPW footage and a Warped Tour DVD and was like, this is the concept for the show. We went in, pitched the poker show and the wrestling show, and literally about a half-hour drive back from the MTV offices to our office at Big Vision, and before we even got back, they had called to say they wanted to do a pilot. And it was just, it was unbelievable luck that my first television pitch was picked up for a pilot. And I remember standing out in the parking lot the next day or the same day with Houston and a guy named Sam Corkus, who was the executive producer with Houston on the show, and had done a number of big reality shows, Bachelor and other shows, and had a really big television pedigree. And he was like, you know, they're probably not going to give us more than $250 for the pilot. Now, mind you, up until this time, the biggest wrestling budgets I'd ever dealt with were like probably about $30,000 for an XPW television taping. And I was like, $250 what? And he was like, $250,000. And my jaw literally dropped. I was like, you're telling me that they're going to let us spend $250,000 to create a pilot? That WSX pilot ended up costing $650,000. For a half hour. Not even half, 22 minutes of television.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It's not cheap to blow things up.
No, we did have some explosions. But like I said, you know, going back to the Kickstarter thing, it's like doing real television with real matching cameras and color correction and audio and high, you know, high-end 3D graphics and all the things that you need to walk into a network and hand them a pilot and say, this is ready for air today, it just adds up.
All right, this person here says, actually, this is from Trina Michael. She says, tell Kleinrock I said hi. I owe him everything.
Oh, she's so sweet. No, Trina is an old friend from Los Angeles. We did use her on our XPW shows when we did the few reunion shows. And I think she was doing some indie stuff at the time, maybe with Bart Kapitsky's AWS and some other things. But then I used her. We did the Lucha Las Vegas pilot, and she was part of that. And so, I did send her over to Gabe at Dragon Gate to do her WrestleMania weekend appearances, which has now led to regular appearances in Evolve and FIP. So I appreciate the sentiment.
This person wants to know if you believe that iPay-per-view sales for fringe and indie companies will ever be robust enough to replace the diminishing DVD market and be a viable, I guess, revenue stream?
No.
Never.
I think that hopefully it will become a revenue stream of significance. But the days of ancillary products for the wrestling business, meaning DVDs, pay-per-views, anything outside of getting a television network to pay you for your content, it's just not there anymore because of piracy, for the most part. There's two things, I think. One is the excessive amount of free content. I could go to YouTube and watch so much stuff for free legally, and then because of piracy. I do think that there's, and I hope and pray, there's always going to be a fan base who wants to see it now, wants to see it live. There's always going to be, I mean, look at what WWN Live has been able to do. I mean, their pay-per-view streaming and quality is so good. And that's why, actually, for the Kickstarter, we're teaming up with them, and they'll be the ones providing the iPay-per-view service for the backers who back at that level. Plus, these episodes that we create, even if we never sell them to television, the backers are going to get VOD access via WWN Live to the episodes before the end of the year or within a few months of whenever we tape them. So even if the project never sees the light of day outside the backers will get to see it. That's a guarantee. And it'll be in a timely manner as well. We look at the system that WWN Live has done, and you look at how maybe they're not making money hand over fist, but they're able to still get to where they need to be for Dragon Gate and Evolve and FIP shows to make it worth the while to continue to produce these shows. Big Vision, before we even did Wrestling Society X, Big Vision was one of the largest DVD distributors of special interest content in the United States. We were doing 8, 9 sometimes releases a month into national retail, not just of wrestling, usually at least a few wrestling titles, but like you mentioned, everything from Ghost Hunters seasons on DVD to kids' videos, and it was very robust. We were doing money, very big money. I mean, even going back to XPW, XPW had DVDs at mass retail before ECW even did, and for a long time, it was the tens of thousands of dollars that we were making from DVD sales alone that was keeping that company running and allowing us to do the TV tapings. Now, those TV tapings themselves never broke even. We'd spend $30,000 to do a show at the Olympic and tape 4 episodes of TV, but it wasn't until we were selling the DVDs that we were seeing any sort of profit on anything that we did. And going back to, like, when we released Hardcore Homecoming and Forever Hardcore for Jeremy Borash and Shane Douglas, we sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of DVDs. That wasn't all money that came back to the company, but those days are just not here anymore. The new Barbed Wire City documentary that just came out, it is a great documentary, and I hope that they can make the same hundreds of thousands of dollars in sales that Forever Hardcore did. I worry that because of piracy and because of the way the industry is now, how many every 8 years later, whatever it's been, that it's not necessarily going to happen, but I hope it does. I hope that they can license it to television because it deserves to be seen and they deserve to make great money. But I have concerns, and that's why, again, kind of going back to the way I approach things, I get so many ideas for projects I'd love to do, but my personal way of looking at things is if I can't get a television network to pay for the content, which is the only way that you can actually be guaranteed to make a profit, then I personally can't put my time and energy into it. Because this just, you know, to have to sell DVDs or to have to try to sell pay-per-views to make that money back, it's really difficult. I mean, even the Viva La Lucha pay-per-views that we did for Mass Republic, just by the time you did the things you had to do for television, including color correction, audio mixing, closed captioning, we didn't make any money off of those Viva La Lucha pay-per-views. And in fact, we're still probably in the hole a little bit for those. I really think that while the iPay-per-view world will hopefully enable wrestling companies to at least continue to produce content, I don't know that it's ever going to make up for the age of super successful DVD sales.
All right, one more here. This person says, what was it like backstage when Vic Grimes fell onto the ropes in the scaffold match with New Jack? Very famous moment for those of you that follow indie wrestling. What were the injuries? What did you think? What happened?
I remember watching it live on the monitor because it was undoubtedly one of the scariest moments of my life. When he hit that rope and there was that moment where you literally did not know whether he was going to bounce into the ring or out of the ring. I mean, you had a 300 plus, maybe he was even bigger than that at the time, man, get thrown like 30 feet. And the way that he hit that rope and he was flung like a rag doll. I mean, a 300 plus pound rag doll was so scary. And thank God he landed in the ring, because I honestly don't know if he'd be alive today if he had flopped the other way. And I remember running out there and checking on him, and the relief that came over when I could tell that he was probably in pain, but he was not paralyzed and he was not dead. The scary moment that followed where, and I don't know that many people ever actually saw this or realized it, but legit shoot, New Jack walked up to him as he's laying there and said, "Receipt, motherfucker." It was
nice.
It was scary. Like that. And Vic is one of the nicest guys in the world. Personally, just outside of wrestling, has really been there for me in some tough moments in life. And I'm so glad that he was okay. That went on to become the best-selling XPW DVD of all time, Freefall. I think that clip is well over a million views online now because it was so crazy to see. I think that, and then R-Truth holding me by my ankle, holding me upside down over some bleachers, were the two scariest XPW moments for me.
You know, I've been in many, many rings, and I don't know what kind of ropes were in that XPW ring, but in a lot of rings, most rings, I would say, the ropes are the cables, steel cables. And I don't know if anyone has ever mentioned this before, but I guess it's probably kind of an exaggeration. But if I feel that if I fell 30 feet and landed on a top rope, I would be sliced in two. That's what I feel, because those cables, I mean, who's talking about this a couple days ago, but just running the ropes, how much pain you're in when you run the ropes the first time. Your back's all cut up, and we're talking just, you know, you're running, probably not very fast because you're brand new, and you're still getting all cut up from hitting these ropes. And here's a guy that was 300 pounds thrown off a scaffold 30 feet and landed on that rope. He's lucky he bounced.
Yeah, you know, and I think maybe part of it was, because if you remember, the ring was full of tables stacked on top of each other. And on the way down, he did clip
That's right, yeah.
And that probably ended up at least decreasing the velocity slightly. But you're right, you know, those are I mean, we used different rings at different times, but for the most part, they were all steel wire, you know, inside of rubber hose. We're very lucky that lucky he bounced into the ring. And it was very, very scary moment.
All right, one last thing before we do a final plug for the Kickstarter. I have to ask about Ghost Hunters. what was your role in this particular series?
I can't claim anything other than Big Vision distributed it. So if you have any of the first five or so seasons on DVD, I created the box art, wrote the copy for the back, created the menus, and just did the DVD production and distribution side of it. Nothing with the show itself.
So you were there in the houses, for example.
No. So Big Vision distributed products for a lot of people. Retailers don't want to take DVDs from everyone that has a DVD. They want to deal with, you know, a select number of distributors and sub-labels, et cetera, et cetera. And so Big Vision ended up distributing content for a lot of people. The funny thing is, so Houston, who owned Big Vision, Houston's actually the one that created the format for The Ultimate Fighter. And so Houston had a long relationship with Craig Piligian of Pilgrim Films, who ended up becoming the production company for Ultimate Fighter. And Houston actually kind of got screwed in that whole deal. Long story short, giving Big Vision the DVD rights for Ghost Hunters, I think, was kind of part of the let's make it up to Houston for taking his Ultimate Fighter idea, having it sit on the table for a few years, and then forgetting to call him when we actually did it and made it a hugely successful show. So we got the DVD rights for Ghost Hunters for a number of years.
I don't know if you'd get in trouble for saying this or not, but from watching any of those Ghost Hunter episodes, is this a what do you think about this Ghosts?
You know, I definitely haven't watched all the episodes. And like I said, I had very little to no contact with the production entity, except for sending them, you know, DVD art to approve. I think there was like a lot of ghost stuff. It's like, you know, you're trying to find something to see. But there are definitely episodes, and again, I wasn't there to see how they shot it and how they did it, but there are definitely a few episodes where it's like, okay, that's a little freaky, or that's a little weird, or, you know, especially like when it comes to like audio recordings. And again, if you're not there, you can't, you know, necessarily say how they did it or what they did it.
Sure.
Those are like the episodes that really kind of got to me, like where you'd hear like, you know, the white noise, and then you'd hear voices. Like, that stuff was always pretty creepy. So even, you know, whether it's 100% fact or fiction, or, you know, whether it's more reality show type of stuff, I thought it was a very entertaining show. And it's definitely some episodes that, you know, were kind of head scratchers. Like, okay, well, if they did that, how'd they do that?
All right, let's get the plugs in for the upcoming Kickstarter and where people will be able to head up for more information. You've written a lot explaining every little detail of this. So if people want more information, believe me, you're going to get it here in a couple days.
Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, the Kickstarter is not up yet. That was my hope by the time we talked. But the best way for information, obviously, I'll send you the information and the link to the Kickstarter once it's up and live. But for all the Mass Republic information, you can follow us on Twitter at Mass Republic, M-A-S-K-E-D, republic.com. You can follow us on Facebook. And then we'll be sure to get the link for the Kickstarter out and around. And I'm really, really happy to have Conan and Sean Waltman involved and attached. And I really think that this is going to be very cool just for the wrestlers that get to be involved and for the industry as a whole. And I hope that I think we've created some really cool and unique rewards for people to come back it. You know, including if you live in LA, the tickets to come see it recorded, you know, recorded live. But even if you live other places around the world. Oh, one thing real quick. We're going to let people be part of the kind of booking as well. There's going to be an opportunity for backers to choose one wrestler from AAA to come and be part of the taping. We're going to be working with Fighting Spirit magazine over in the UK to come up with wrestlers that can be voted on from the UK who can come and be part of this. And then other higher rewards will actually allow people to be part of the matchmaking process for one of the tournaments we're going to do as part of this. So a lot of fun, cool, interactive rewards. Like you said, the, you know, getting Conan's live, unfiltered producer commentary as this taping happens will be fun. So I think that there should be something for everyone here, and I look forward to getting to show people more about what it's going to be all about.
Easiest place to go is Twitter, at Masked Republic. We'll have all of the information about this upcoming project and how you can be involved. Kickstarter is going to be up in a couple of days, and we'll, of course, post links to that on the front page of the website, daily update, that sort of thing. Sean Waltman involved, Conan is involved, and also a link on the Twitter to the actual website, MaskedRepublic.com. So check all of that out, and I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. Had a great time, and got a lot of questions answered, and also some backstage scoops on Urban Wrestling. The best part of this show will remain the backstage scoops about Urban Wrestling. But still, yes, everyone should support everything else as well. But thanks again, Kevin. I really appreciate it. And maybe down the road we'll do this again and get an update on everything.
Sounds great. I appreciate it so much.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again after a while.